I'm in the belly of a very rare beast, the Boeing B-29 Superfortress, preparing to fly on a historic flight with two rare individuals who 60 years ago would never have flown on this aircraft due to social attitudes, but they did anyway. The B-29 was the last and most advanced of the Allied bombers to serve in World War II. It flew higher, faster, and carried more munitions than anything else on either side of the air war. The B-29 also is known as the only aircraft to drop atomic weapons in war. Colonel Paul Tibbets was the commander on that flight over Hiroshima in August 1945, but earlier, as he trained his squadron for the secret mission, he had a problem. By then, the B-29 had earned a reputation for being difficult to fly, as well as engines that tended to catch fire.
Back in probably about 42, 43, when the B-29 was first being introduced, it wasn't very popular, was it?
No.
Wasn't the kind of airplane that most men wanted to fly. It was notorious for unreliable engines. It was also notorious for catching fire and a few other things, I guess. And I guess the men didn't want to fly it, did they?
That's aircraft commander David Oliver, who is talking with Dora Doherty, who we'll meet in a minute. Oliver flies the commemorative Air Force's B-29 Fifi, named for wife of the benefactor and former B-29 engineer who helped rescue this bomber from boneyard obscurity in the 1970s. Fifi is the only remaining airworthy B-29 and is one of 160 World War II-era military aircraft the 9,000-member CAF restores and maintains, with many on active tours to aviation events.
These are the only Curtiss-Wright 3350s of this type that you'll ever see in the entire world. Now, the history is that the early 3350s were notoriously bad for swallowing valves and other types of problems, overheating, catching on fire. We took some of the later variations, actually a C-119 3350, and a few other dash numbers and put it together for a hybrid motor that we call the 3350-B29.
The B-29 was rushed to production, and it had some growing pains. But other than that, it had many of the improvements lacking in previous bombers. It was big, too, almost 100 feet with a long, tubular shape and a rounded nose. It even had a tunnel to connect the front and the back by bypassing the bomb bay from above, allowing all crew spaces to stay pressurized. Gone were the heavy leather flying suits and oxygen masks needed in other bombers in the Allied arsenal. Larry Popp, who flew jumbo jets in Africa and the Middle East, is a volunteer crew member on Fifi when it tours.
This airplane was built in 1944 by the Boeing Company. It was very advanced for its time. It was the first airplane to have a pressurized cockpit and partial cabin. One thing I don't know if you noticed or not, that each crew member station had a cigarette lighter in it. So I guess the guys all smoked back then. They were young and scrawny and very brave.
So were women like Dora Doherty and Dorothea D.D. Moorman. During the war, women didn't fly in combat, but they did a lot of military flying. The Women Air Force Service Pilots, or WASPs, flew multiple aircraft and multiple missions, mostly ferrying aircraft from factories to combat theaters. But they also towed targets for gunnery practice, flew VIPs, maintenance test flights, and whatever else needed to be done.
So Colonel Paul Tibbets recruited two female pilots to get in this airplane. You got in, Dora? And was it hard to fly?
It was so easy, even a woman could fly it.
So today we're going to go up, and Dora is going to show me how to fly a B-29.
After about 8 hours of training, Dora and Dee Dee were sent off to tour bases.
What was the reaction from the men?
Where's the pilot?
We wore overalls. You know, they didn't know we were women initially. We were always, I think, well accepted. I don't recall any antagonism or feeling of resentment, or I always felt that I was part of a group. The men I worked with were gentlemen, very accepting. I always felt like I was part of a crew, part of a squadron.
As we take off, also on board is Air Force Lieutenant Colonel George Hardy, retired, a Tuskegee Airman who flew 45 missions in the B-29 in Korea as a co-pilot. He got to sit in the bombardier seat, a seat he had never tried before.
When I was flying in World War II, I was 19. I was the youngest pilot in a group. In Vietnam, I was 45, the oldest pilot flying regular missions.
Aircraft design borrows a lot from ships, the terminology, the parts of the plane, and in large aircraft, the duties of the crew. Like in a ship, large aircraft in that era, especially bombers, the pilots steer the ship, navigator keeps track of their position, a flight engineer controls the engines, while crew throughout the aircraft monitor systems inside and out. Paul Maupin, a scanner with the CAF, marvels that in the 1940s, there was a fire control computer as part of the aircraft defenses.
The normal crew, way back when, was six people in the front and five more in the back. They had a bombardier pilot, co-pilot, flight engineer, a navigator, and a radio operator in the front, three midship gunners, a radar operator in that room, and then the tail gunner. The idea that, number one, there was a, quote, computer system, unquote, in the airplane is pretty fascinating. And to me, the ability to assign different gunners a specific turret. The same person did not shoot the same turret all the time. And in an emergency, multiple guns could be assigned to one particular gunner, which is ahead of its time, to say the least.
Our flight today takes off from Lakeland, Florida, where the Sun and Fun fly-in is taking place. Once in the air, we're allowed to roam the aircraft, peering out windows and crawling into various spaces. It's a relatively easy crawl through the tunnels of the front compartment, which is spacious and terraced, with the bombardier sitting below and in front of the pilots. Dora Doherty is seated quietly behind David Oliver, occasionally speaking with us as we explore.
It was a very easy aircraft to fly. You wouldn't think so, being so big, but the word spread quickly. If the men were at all anxious about it, that, good Lord, they've got two women flying it, so you might just as well check out in it.
Back on the ground, Dora is all smiles and was asked when was the last time she flew on a B-29. She knew exactly when that was.
God was a boy.
When is the next time a woman will fly a B-29? It could be soon. CAF pilots Debbie King and Tracy Toth have completed their ground training and are waiting for flight training slots in the B-29 squadron, which, like any flight department, open up when others move on. Tracy became involved in the CAF while volunteering for her local air museum in Pennsylvania. In the past, she worked as a flight attendant, cargo pilot, and instructor before pausing to raise a family. She says that the CAF invited Doherty to fly on Fifi at Sun and Fun, but they never heard a response.
Someone turned around to me and said, Dora's here. I was stunned. I couldn't speak. I mean, I had read so much about this woman, and then she was there. I asked her immediately, what was Paul Tibbetts like? And she said, you know, he was really straightforward. He would tell you exactly how it was.
The WASP experience for many women was the apex of their aviation careers. However, for Dora, she was just getting started as she went on to earn several degrees and have a distinguished career as an engineer with Bell Helicopter, setting several records in the Bell 47. Dee Dee Moorman would leave aviation behind after the war and died in 2005. While the B-29 holds a special place for Dora, it's her aviation colleagues she remembers the most.
It's hard to differentiate the aircraft from the people that flew with me. I would have to say the B-29, it was a beautiful airplane to fly, but the crew that I flew with was always just a wonderful group.
I'm Afterburner Al, EAA Radio.